Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Jim Turpin. I'll be here until 11 o'clock this morning. This first hour is an open line. Then a conversation with the former Champaign Mayor Dan McCullum. Been a long time since we've talked to Dan McCullum on the air. Since we don't have many days left, I thought it would be fun to bring him in and talk about his time as mayor and all the other things he's been involved in, the Virginia Theater and Keep Central Central and all those. He's been active. He's a great guy and a great friend, and we'll visit with Dan right after the 10 o'clock news. Big week coming up next week. Got the Lauren Tate on Monday. That'll be our Monday morning quarterback show, as usual. And then Bob Steigman on Tuesday for both hours of the program. He's been a long-time guest on this show, up 30-plus years. And be good to have Bob on Tuesday. Jim Dye has been a regular for quite some time. He's been on every other week for I don't know how long now, but he'll be here next Wednesday. Then another favorite guest of mine and of yours as well is Julia Reitz. Julia will be here at 9 o'clock on Thursday, and she'll be here for an hour taking your questions and comments. Then a special program on Friday the 22nd, featuring several singers and performers and a little bit of nostalgia, some fun. Be my last day here on the Penny next Friday, a week from today, and it'll be a little different kind of a show. We want to do some fun things, have some music that will kind of salute the Champaign-Urbana Theater Company, the high schools, Parkland, all the other people that we've helped promote their shows over the years. So I thought that'd be a lot of fun. And we got some other surprises as well. So that is next week. What about today? Well, the end of net neutrality. What it all means. I wish I was an expert on this. I'm not. And I've got some explanations from various people about what happened yesterday and what it means to you and to me as a consumer. So we'll talk about that some. In North Korea, Kim Jong-un's top aide executed by the death squad. The lesson here evidently is don't quibble with the boss. Not when he's that little fat guy that might do most anything. Ooh, he is a scary little dude. Republicans have turned their focus to FBI's McCabe over text messages on insurance against Trump. The National Volleyball Championship is down to two teams after Nebraska beats Penn State again. I believe that's seven straight times that Nebraska has beaten Penn State. It was Penn State's only loss this season. Nebraska beat them, and then they beat them again last night. And then Florida downed the defending champion Stanford. That, of course, is Kevin Hambley's team in five. So that means that Nebraska and Florida play tomorrow night, Saturday night, for the title. Interesting thing happened in the Nebraska-Penn State game, in case you didn't see it. Nebraska had match point. Match point. They only needed one more point to move on into the finals. Got a perfect set. The ball was on the way to the setter. She was in great position at the net. It might have ended everything right there for Penn State. And there was a mix-up of some sort. The setter and another player bumped into each other, and the setter tripped and fell and wasn't able to to get the set done, and just the ball just fell to the floor. It was a point for the Nebraska, and they go on to win it then in five. Amoroso calls Robin petty and declares a black woman civil war. What's that all about? Well, I didn't know until I read about it this morning, and I'll tell you what they have to say in case you're interested in that kind of thing. And ESPN, with their dwindling audience, issues a warning to their on-air personalities: stick to sports and avoid politics. Senator Marco Rubio says he will vote against the $1.5 trillion tax reform bill unless the tax credit low-income Americans can claim for their children is expanded. And we just received a word last night Jimmy John Leotode will receive the 2018 Horatio Alger Award. He will be joining 11 other exceptional individuals across this country, each of whom has overcome significant challenges to achieve professional and personal success. He is the owner, founder, and chairman of Jimmy John's Gourmet Sandwich Restaurants, and I think, I don't know how many of them they have now. It's getting up around 4,000 or so. So those are some of the headlines. We'll talk about other things as well. But let's see what Earl has on his mind. Hello, Earl.
Jim.
Yes.
I have a question for the NASCAR fans of Jim Turpin Nation.
I'm sorry?
I have a question for the NASCAR fans of Jim Turpin Nation.
Oh, all right. What's the question?
About 2 or 3 years ago, Queen Elizabeth came to Louisville to watch the Kentucky Derby. While she was there, she had an audience with Richard Petty. So my question to the NASCAR fans is, what did the Queen have to say to the King?
Is this a joke?
Nope.
It's true.
When she was here in Louisville, she had an audience with Richard Petty.
Oh, okay. So she had something to say, and you're asking if anybody knows what that was, right?
Yeah.
Well, if they don't, are you going to tell me?
Well, I don't know. That's what I'm asking. Because when I heard the report when it aired, they never really said exactly what they discussed, and I've always been curious ever since what they talked about.
Oh, well, so you don't know what they talked about. You're just trying to find out, right?
Yeah.
Well, okay, we'll see if anybody knows. It would be my guess that the Queen doesn't do much talking. It probably wouldn't be much of a conversation, but...
you might be right on that one.
Well, we'll see if anybody knows, Earl. Thank you. About Daryl. What's going on, Daryl?
Hey, I got a comment. Yesterday or the day before, on the morning show, Elizabeth Hess and I believe it was Dave Gentry, they were talking about I think it was an Ohio congresswoman in her 70s that said maybe young women should be a little more careful how they dress, you know, with all this sexual accusations. Anyway, and Elizabeth immediately said, oh, victim shaming. No, not victim shaming. I've got 6 daughters, and I tell you what, from day one, I had heard this a long time ago, and I said, if you don't have something for sale, don't advertise. Women going around and scantily clad, these beauty pageant women complaining that men were oogling them, but why are they going half naked across the stage? You know, I'm all against sexual harassment and all that stuff, but you know, sometimes it's it's brought on intentionally or unintentionally. But I think some women need to think a little bit more how they dress. And men aren't mind-numbed robots like Rush talks about. Men have emotions and feelings and everything else, and you can't tell me when women walk across the stage in a beauty pageant that the men are just sitting there thinking about something else. I don't believe it.
Yeah, I heard Rush talking about that the other day. He said when they come walking across the stage in their bathing suits, he says all the men are thinking, well, I wish they'd get to put some more clothes on and let us hear what they think about world affairs or something like that. So he was
exactly. So it goes two ways.
Well, yeah. In fact, there have been two congresswomen that have said things along that same way. About the same things, and you know, perhaps, I don't know, but there have been so many of them now since the Harvey Weinstein thing, and I don't know if all these women that were sexually harassed, you know, how they were dressed or anything else. It's just bad business. That's what it is. And
go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was waiting for you. Go ahead.
What if a man came forward and said he was sexually harassed? Would the media do anything with it? What if a guy was working in an office and some woman, you know, brushed up against him every day or made some little gestures? Would that be considered sexual harassment? And would he have any grounds to complain?
Well, he would certainly have grounds to complain. He could complain if he wanted to. I don't know if anything would happen or not, or how much coverage it would get. But there have been cases like that. That's for sure. Not very many, but
well, anyway. Yeah, I just wanted to get it off my chest. So,
all right. I hope you feel better today, Daryl.
Thank you.
Bye bye. I don't know if anybody else wants to pick up on that or not. I tend to think that many of these sexual... The thing that interests me is how long it took people to do this, and some of the statute of limitations have run out on them, so I don't know what's going to happen to the allegations. I talked to Julia Reitz about this the last time she was on. And, you know, unless there is something bad happens, something criminal happens, there's not much that that can be done, I don't think. We'll see, because there have been several lawsuits filed in conjunction with these allegations. Here locally and on a different topic, but in the court, in circuit court, a convicted murderer with a shooting conviction in his past will spend what amounts to the rest of his life in prison. Robbie Patton was sentenced to 69 years for a fatal shooting. Was handed down by Judge Roger Weber. And in Champaign County, in the courtroom, a man was acquitted in a drug case. Mary Shank writes about that in the newspaper this morning. And the president is going to speak at the FBI National Academy in a little while. He's making other speeches in various places. Seems like every day he is out someplace and talking about the tax plan and so on. I don't know what he'll say at the FBI National Academy, because there have been several controversial aspects of what the FBI has done in the past couple of years. We're at 356-9397. Our text line is 351-5357. We'll take our first break right here and come right back. We're back on Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Jim Turpin. We go back to the phones, and Anna Wall is on this morning. Hello, Anna Wall.
Good morning, Mr. Turpin. You know what, being a woman, if I had been approached the way that these ladies were supposed to, my first response would have been, bring me your wife's permission. And I think that would have nipped it in the bud. My other concern is, why did they wait so long to tell this? And I am kind of paranoid about that. I believe it's political. I believe they're being paid to embarrass some of the, one of these parties is paying somebody to embarrass the other one. So
you really, you think there have been so many of them, you think they've all been paid to say these things?
Well, there's a possibility, but first of all, if somebody would approach me like that, I would say, well, get your wife's permission.
Well, maybe they aren't married.
Well, that might be true. In that case, I'd have to come up with something else. But I'd tell them where to go, and I won't say that on the media, but I'd tell them where to go and how quick to make it. And I wouldn't wait until now to bring it up.
Yeah, that's hard to understand why they waited for so long. I guess in many cases in the movie business, it's been known for a long time that the way you move up the ranks and get better roles, et cetera, better parts in the movies is to be friendly with the producers and the people putting the movie together.
Well, and also while I have you on the line, I want to tell you how much I will miss you, even though you and I don't agree on certain things. I think you've been an excellent monitor, whatever you call it, and I wish you the best of luck.
Well, that's very kind of you, Anna Wall. I've enjoyed talking to you as well. Appreciate your call this morning. Ben is next. Hi, Ben.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, sir.
I'm calling in response to the last caller and your comments about, you know, why are the women waiting so long? And this is something I keep seeing people ask this, and it keeps being explained very clearly, and somehow people are missing it. So I'll take my best to explain. We see in the very comments of the woman who preceded me, she said, "I don't understand why they're waiting so long. I think they're all getting paid." And then you said, I agree. I don't understand why they're waiting so long, but it's been long known that you need to be friendly and need to go along in the movie business to work your way up. In your very comments, you're revealing that you do have an understanding. You haven't put it together yet, but these women get attacked. These women, when they come forward, they're not believed. They get attacked. They get, if they're in an industry and their harasser, or their assaulter is someone more powerful, they run the risk of getting run out of their industry or getting blackballed. So there are lots of reasons that women don't come forward. And in many cases, the people who are saying, "I don't understand why they don't come forward," right when it happens, are perpetuating the very behaviors that prompt women to stay silent.
Yeah, well, that was a point. I hope I was made the same point that you did about the fact that they're, I guess we could use the word afraid, or at least they're concerned about their careers and things like that, that they're likely to put up with all kinds of things that shouldn't be happening to them in order to keep the thing moving, keep the career moving.
Well, in that case, I apologize if I mischaracterized your words, but certainly the caller before me to suggest that all these women are getting paid, and I appreciate you calling her out on that, and she deflected because I don't think she actually believes it. But you're absolutely right.
You know, there might be a few or a couple on the political platform, you know, well, okay, this is one way we can harm this candidate by saying such and such, but that's not what this is about.
I agree, and I'll just say there is a distinction between if someone does come forward with true allegations for political motives because they say this person hurt me 30 years ago and now I have a chance to hurt them. I want to be very clear, there's a distinction between that and being paid to come forward. Having your own motivations for coming forward is very different from being paid by a third party. And also, most of the people who, I think most of the accusations that these women are being paid, there's an undercurrent that not just are they being paid to finally tell the truth after all these years, but they're being paid to lie. And there's a very, very big difference between coming forward of your own volition to tell the truth and coming forward with a lie because you were paid. I want to make that very clear.
And some of these women have made it very clear that this is a kind of a closure for them because they've lived
Absolutely.
With this shame for all these years that this had happened to them. They didn't know what to do about it, or they were afraid to do something about it.
Definitely.
So if nothing else happens, if they don't make, you know, don't go to court or anything else, at least they've they got that off their chest.
For sure, and that's an important thing.
Well, thank you, Ben. Appreciate the call,
Thank
sir.
You.
Now, tomorrow at 12 o'clock noon, the Norm Willoughby Auction is offering a unique collection of memorabilia from the Little Theater on the Square. Hundreds of signed photos of stars and contracts and personal correspondence and costume books and much, much more. Shelley Winters, Robert Wagner, Van Johnson, Eve Arden, Robert Conrad, Dennis Weaver, Forrest Tucker, many, many more. A lot of people appeared down at the Little Theater on the Square, and a lot of memorabilia has been collected and kept over all these years. Now they are auctioning it off. And in addition, there's also a lot of antiques and collectibles and furniture from the Guy Little Jr. estate. It's tomorrow, December the 16th, 12 o'clock noon, this auction of memorabilia from the Little Theater in the Square. It's being held at the VFW Hall, 1132. That's on Route 32, south, 1 mile south of Sullivan. We'll go back to our open line in just a bit, but Michael Kaiser has the news headlines, and then we'll come back and continue up until 10 o'clock. Then after that, we'll visit for a while with former mayor of Champaign, Dan McCullum. Here is Michael Kaiser. We're back on Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Jim Turpin. This is an open line going right up until 10 o'clock this morning. The fight for the future of the Internet just came to a head. This is a story from yesterday afternoon. The Republican-led Federal Communications Commission voted yesterday to repeal the Obama-era net neutrality protections. The repeal passed along a party-line vote. The FCC chairman, appointed by President Trump, has framed the repeal as getting the government to stop micromanaging the Internet. The move is supported by the telecom industry, which claims existing regulations threaten to hamper broadband investments and innovation. Technology companies and consumer advocacy groups have loudly protested the repeal effort for months, both online and offline, arguing it could spell the end of the Internet as we know it. What exactly is net neutrality? As I said before, this is not something that I know a lot about, but I'll be happy to share with you what they have to say about what happened yesterday and what it may or may not mean. The net neutrality rules were approved by the FCC in 2015 amid an outpouring of online support. The intention was to keep the Internet open and fair. Under the rules, Internet service providers are required to treat all online content the same. They can't deliberately speed up or slow down traffic from specific websites or apps, nor can they put their own content at an advantage over rivals. To take a classic example, this means that Comcast can't just choose to slow down a service like Netflix to make its own streaming video service more competitive. Nor can it try to squeeze folks to pay more money to be part of the so-called Internet Fast Lane. As Michael Crea, the general counsel at the video site Vimeo, previously told CNN Money, the point of the rules is allowing consumers to pick the winners and losers and not having the cable companies make those decisions for them. Well, first, it's important to say that billion-dollar services like Netflix are not going to disappear overnight without the audiences and bank accounts in a battle to survive in a changing regulatory landscape. Instead, net neutrality advocates worry how repeal will impact the next Netflix. Upstart companies could struggle to strike deals with providers and pay up to have their content delivered faster. That could fundamentally alter the future internet landscape. Is this over? Well, not quite. It's likely the issue will be decided in court or perhaps even by legislation in Congress. And if it gets into the Congress, you know it will take a long time. Supporters of the rules plan to urge Congress to halt the FCC's repeal, a move unlikely to succeed with GOP majorities in the House and the Senate. But there is bipartisan support for net neutrality, and some lawmakers want to pass net neutrality legislation that would enshrine some of the principles in law. That would give the FCC the authority to enforce them without using utility-like oversight that some fear could lead to rate regulations and other regulations. Several companies as well probably, are taking this to court. Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan said, "Today's commission vote undermines the public interest by putting our free and open internet at risk. In taking this action, the commission disregarded the overwhelming view of the public and ignored the legal precedent upholding the existing net neutrality rules." A lot of other states are doing the same thing. It's going to be a multi-state lawsuit, and Illinois has indicated it would join the suit. It is 9:42. We take a quick break here. Phone lines open at 356-9397. And you can text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line. That's 351-5357. Phone lines open at 356-9397, and we go to Bob. Hello, Bob.
Hi. I want to thank you for taking the call.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to talk about those houses over by Central.
The houses. Okay. The ones that are being going to be demolished?
Yes. I've seen the news, and there was one person that spoke about it, and they was for destroying them or taking them down from the school. Well, years ago over in Urbana, the same thing happened, and it was one person spoke, and it was 12 that spoke also, but they was against what they was going to do in Urbana. I think what's happening here is the same thing, and why I'm calling, I think I know a little bit about it. I wore, did many, many jobs, different kinds, wore a lot of hats through life. But one of them happened to be a maintenance man for Jerry Ramshaw. I've been into all those homes. I know what they are. And what they're trying to destroy is a jewel amongst everything. And the people here, if you would take three people from the school, three people from the city board, three people from the park district and three people from the community. What you've got here is a very unique building that can be used for teaching, can be used for drawing people to here to look at what was done. The building's about 150 years old, and it is very unique in its ways. I've built homes, apartments, offices, churches. I work on a lot of buildings. I've seen a lot of old buildings, and that's very unique and what's in it. But the school could use it for teaching. It's something to tell somebody something, but if you can take a person and show them, then it's right close to the school. Why would you destroy something that is valuable for teaching? It just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I don't know when you say one person spoke against it or for it,
yes,
or whatever. I watched the Champaign City Council meeting the other night, and it lasted about 2.5 hours, and there were people on both sides talking the entire time. So it was quite, there were a lot of people there from PACA, and there were a lot of other people that, in fact, one person said that his mother was born in that house, and she would be turning over in her grave with knowing, I'm talking about the Burnham House now, what it looked like. They say this building, the Burnham House in particular, is in such bad shape that it would take, millions of dollars just to get the thing up to speed where somebody could live in it. Is that, have you been in there lately? I have not. I'm just going on what other people say.
No, not lately. I worked for Jerry Ramshaw 14 years. I've been in all those buildings, but mostly the one that they're one. The other two are like any old home, but that one is really unique on the way it looks or it was, but it's been about 10 to 15 years since I have been actually in it.
Yeah, it has. It evidently, according to any number of people, a dozen or more people. In fact, the city council took a tour of the building, as did people from the school district from Unit 4, and they looked at it and they talked about what kind of shape it's in, and they said it looks just beautiful from the outside, which it does. People drive by there and say, wow, that's a great looking building. But from the inside, it evidently has just gone. It's nothing has, has been worked on there for a real long time. And it's an awful shape is what they said. So I'm just telling you what they said.
Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you. I'm sorry that you're going to have to retire, but we all get older. But I've enjoyed listening to you, and you're very unique in the way that you handle different problems that's asked. So I want to thank you for your time.
Well, thank you, Bob. You're very nice to say that. I've enjoyed it myself. I kind of hoped it might last a little longer, but it you're quite right. It's everybody has a time and a place, and evidently this is my time.
Thank you for your time.
Appreciate it, Bob, and that very interesting call. Maybe, just to, for your own sake, just to make you feel better about it, maybe you could go look at that building. I don't know who opens it up, but I think a lot of people have toured it, because this would be something I can talk to Dan McCullum about too, because I think he's very interested in preservation, but I think he believes that this building is almost beyond repair. So I don't know. I'm telling you all I know. I'm telling you what other people said. Thank you, Bob. We appreciate it very much. We're at 356-9397. It is 9:51. Well, Busey is right in the middle of celebrating the holidays with their 12 Days of Giving. You can enter to win one of 12 great prizes, including a donation to a charity of your choice. Each weekday, They started this back at the beginning of December, and it's going to last through December the 18th. To enter to win, you like Busey on Facebook or follow them on Twitter and Instagram. Look for the 12 Days of Giving post through December the 18th and perform the action specified. Triple your chances of winning. Enter on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Prizes include a $100 gift cards to popular retailers, including Target and Starbucks, charitable donations in your name, and much, much more. Plus, the more you participate, the higher chance you'll have to win Busey's surprise prize. Busey is your source for exciting giveaways and so much more. Connect with Busey on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram today to learn more about what's going on in our community. Give helpful tips and information on managing your finances and create change through social media fundraising campaigns. For official rules and to enter, contact with Busey on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or visit Busey.com or stop by any Busey location or call 1-800-67-BUSEY. Let's go to Rob. Hello, Rob.
Hey, good morning, Jim. Those houses that they're proposed to tear down, I'd love to see them do like a virtual reality video inside and out of those homes so it could be preserved for eternity, maybe keep it at the library or something like that so people can see what the houses look like both inside and out.
That would be a good idea. And I know they, before they would ever demolish any of them, they've invited the people from PACA and others concerned to go in there and take out, you know, for some special wood or special this or that you just can't find anymore. You know, take all of that out before the big demolishing equipment came.
Yeah, I think that'd be great too. They'd allow them to strip that out then. Okay, that's all I had. Thanks, Jim.
Yeah, well, thank you, Rob. Appreciate your call. Want to congratulate our friend Jimmy John Lieto for receiving the 2018 Horatio Alger Award. This is an award, that's quite significant. The Horatio Alger Association of Distinguished Americans is a nonprofit educational organization honoring the achievements of outstanding individuals and encouraging youth to pursue their dreams through higher education. For more than 70 years, the Horatio Alger Award has been annually bestowed upon business, civic, and cultural leaders who have succeeded despite facing adversities and who have remained committed to higher education and charitable efforts in their local communities. Jimmy is an excellent example of the Horatio Alger story that Matthew Rose, who's the president of the organization. He persevered through a series of events during his childhood and ultimately followed his own path to create the life that he desired. I believe that many of our scholars will relate to Jimmy's challenges and find hope and comfort in the fact that he did not let these hardships limit him. He believed in himself. Lieto was born in 1964 in Arlington Heights, the second of four children. His mother was a Lithuanian immigrant, and his father was an inventor, entrepreneur, and educator who started as an encyclopedia salesman, then launched a plastic molding business. The beginnings and failings of his many ventures took the family on a roller coaster of highs and lows throughout Lieto's childhood and early teen years, including two bankruptcies. Lieto struggled in school, finished second to last in his high school class. Today, his philosophy is a simple one. Outwork the competition. Push forward. Learn from mistakes. He founded Jimmy John's in 1983 with a $25,000 loan from his father. To launch the business, he went door to door at Eastern Illinois University dorms, offering free samples of his sandwiches. Jimmy John's soon became a fast casual trailblazer, establishing the use of delivery drivers to reach a wide range of customers and baking bread in store all day, every day, to ensure that sandwiches are served within 4 hours of baking. Now, Jimmy John's is one of the fastest growing franchises in the United States, with this says 2,700 locations in 43 states. I have a feeling it's a lot more than that. I had Jimmy on the air not too long ago, and I thought he said they were going to try to get to 4,000 in the upcoming year. But anyway, our congratulations to him. He and the other members of the class of 2018 will be formally inducted into the association in April 2018 during the association's 71st Horatio Alger Award induction ceremonies in Washington, D.C. It is 9:58, and we go to John. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Jim. I wanted to let the caller know who had just called about photographs of the inside of the Burnham Mansion, directing his attention, perhaps yours or anyone else's, to the planning department's report on that building. It is available online. It is the recommendation that the building be saved, the staff recommendation that the building be saved. It documents extensively what the inside of the structure looks like. Certainly does not suggest, as had come up with that caller, that it needed millions of dollars to be useful as a living space. I believe the building was occupied up until the time that it was sold.
Well, that city, Champaign City Council meeting, there was more than one person that said had just been on a tour and said it needed a lot of work. Listen, I would talk to you longer, but I'm hitting the news here at the top of the hour. But appreciate your call here on WDWS in Champaign-Urbana. Welcome back to hour number two of A Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Jim Turpin. And as a promise, we're going to visit for a while with Dan McCullum. Dan McCullum has been, I'm pleased to say, a good friend of mine for many, many years, a former mayor of the city of Champaign, and involved in a lot of projects in which I had a lot of interest. So we got a lot of things to talk about today. And since my days are the number of days are getting shorter and shorter, Dan, I want to make sure that I get all my friends and all the people that have helped me over the years on the air for a little while anyway. And so welcome here. We got a lot of things to talk about, but very good to see you. I haven't seen you for a while. I guess the last time I've seen you on the television, things like that, but I think the last time when we really saw each other face to face was at the opening of the Kickapoo Trail.
Well, I'm flattered to be asked to be here, Jim.
The Kickapoo is quite a trail, and I don't know what the ridership is now in this cold weather, but a lot of people were, when the weather was nice, were out there going, and I was pleased to see that Vermilion has got a little money. They're going to start the other half of it.
I think it'll be a great amenity.
You still ride your bike?
Still riding my bike, but I walk more. So I don't get around town in a car.
I wanted to talk to you about when you were mayor. What, as you look back, what were some of the big items back in those days? What were some things, I guess, that we could call controversial, or that got a lot of input from the public and from the council?
It seemed like everything I got involved in was controversial. I don't think I was mayor longer than a couple of weeks when the Kraft annexation situation came up. And it was suddenly we had surrounded Kraft. So legally, under this piece of state legislation, we had the right to annex it. And, of course, we were determined to annex it. And suddenly there was a bill introduced by, of all people, Tim Johnson, to exempt a food processing facility. Well, I hit the ceiling, and I called Tim and told him, if you do that, you're going to have a mighty unhappy mayor on your hands. Well, he was going to introduce the legislation. Somebody else introduced it. He voted against it. So it passed almost unanimously in the House. I said, there's one last straw here, and that's Stan Weaver. And Stan Weaver worked it out, so we worked out an accommodation that was satisfactory to both parties. I had a lot of respect for Stan Weaver.
Well, I did, too. He was kind of a quiet, behind-the-scenes guy, but if you're looking for someone to get something done, Stan Weaver could do it.
Well, he was the number two guy in the Senate at the time, and I said, that's our ball game. But then there was Burnham Hospital that came up, and, of course, now we have in the news the nursing home, and I just don't think government is very well prepared to operate health facilities, and have said so repeatedly. Trying to think what some of the more, well, of course, the Boneyard project was a huge, it took the entire time, and I was mayor for 12 years, it took the entire time working away at that, and it wasn't really finished until after I left, but a great project.
A lot of flooding going on back in those days.
Well, see, I was a student, undergraduate student here back in the 50s. And there was a lot of water sports going on there in a good rainstorm.
Yeah. Some people said we should turn this into San Antonio and have, have a little canal going there with little boats and have restaurants along the way. It hasn't quite got to that spot yet, but it's a lot better than it was.
Well, Jim, picture... You've probably been to San Antonio Water Walk.
Yes, I have.
And there's just loads of concrete and stuff like that. Can you imagine what a few Yankee winners would do to all of that? And then, of course, we didn't have the right-of-way that you'd be required for something like that. Mm-hmm. So we did get a very nice walkway through campus. And the water's gone.
Yeah, that's the main thing there. people used to be in canoes or going right down Green Street. Well, here's a picture. It was the front page of today's News Gazette, and made me think of you. Country star Martina McBride performs during the Joy of Christmas concert Thursday night at the Virginia Theater.
Can you imagine this town without the Virginia?
I cannot. But your role is what I want to talk about. Anytime anybody brings up the Virginia, I say to them, Dan McCollum had a big role in keeping this theater going. They were about ready to, I don't know if they're going to demolish it or just close it up or make it into a parking lot.
Well, first of all, it's the grandest movie house ever built in this town, I mean, by a comfortable margin. And the experience of the Orpheum was what really troubled me, because when Carasota shut the place down, they cut off the electricity to it. The basement flooded. The humidity called all that wonderful plaster work on the Orpheum to fall onto the seats. It was I could just visualize if that had closed, if the Virginia had closed. And I called together a group of downtown interests, and John Hirschfeld was there representing the Gazette. But the bankers, Christie, I called them all in. And the person that offered some tangible help was John. And through the News Gazette, and the News Gazette has been a strong supporter, I mean, from the very get-go. There was a lot of hands in there, and I'd also like to add that Bob Tolson, moving to get it into the Park District, I miss Bob. He was pretty outstanding.
Oh, me
public
too.
Administrator. But that's what saved the Virginia, was Bob ultimately taking it over.
Now they have a terrific program guide out with events and films and all kinds of things going on there all the time. It's just a wonderful place to go. And, of course, we have the wonderful Ebert Fest there. And I know I see you down there watching those movies every once in a while.
I like the old movies better than the new ones.
Yeah, well, I do too, I think. You're involved in a lot of things, and I know you were one of the people that back when the Unit 4 was trying to decide where to build a new high school, there popped up a committee called Keep Central Central. And if it had not been for them and their work, and I know you were a part of that, I doubt if that last referendum that they had, the third of three, would have passed, and we'd have been where we are now. But with it comes a little controversy. The other night they had a Champaign City Council meeting. It lasted 2 or 3 hours from people from PACA and other places. It's been well known that at least three properties there that were purchased were going to be demolished, and PACA put up a strong fight against that, and the council voted the other night. Looks like it's going to happen, but what's your feeling about a grand old house? If you drive by the outside of that house, it looks like a great place.
Well, first of all, it's an 1885 building, and it's a frame building. It's been badly worked over, turned into 12 apartments. So the building, to have raised that to a useful standard, because literally it was right in the path for Central to be able to cross Church Street. So it was going. It was in the line of fire at the outset, but then to have PACA at the last minute, after we voted the bond issue, after Unit 4 acquired the properties, suddenly at the literally the last minute, they throw this idea of recognizing the three properties. Well, I don't think it made any sense. It's one of those things where, yes, there's a lot of things you ought to be able to save, but if you can't save them for a long-term further use, then what's the point of preservation? You want to preserve something that has a... You can't just leave a house there because
It's old.
Because it's old and because it's historic. The first really major benefactors of Champaign were Albert and Julia Burnham. Julia Burnham wanted a hospital. Julia Burnham felt we should have a building for a public library. Albert loved his wife, and he made it both happen. So they're very significant people. But I will say this, that the local direct descendants of Albert and Julia Burnham felt that... I think that Albert Burnham would have been pleased to see his house go to a further useful purpose.
Yeah, somebody called this morning and was indicating that they had the idea that this would be a great place for classrooms or meeting rooms and I can visualize too, if it were in a different location and so forth, and it wouldn't cost all that money to rehab it, that you could do a lot with the building. And but none of those things are true, and it's in fact, Newt Dodds at the council meeting says his mother, I think he said she was born there.
She literally was born there.
And spent a lot of years there. He said she would turn over in her grave if she knew what condition that building was in now.
Well, it's just an old an old building. And codes require, for especially public use, very high standards. This building had three floors. And in the process of the three floors, can you imagine upgrading the electrical, putting in air conditioning, fire escapes, and all of this on a scale that far exceeds any private use of such a building, made it just unthinkable to be used as a public facility. So, you know, I remember the Willis Mansion there on Prospect. I remember the Harris Mansion that was on the corner of Church and the Prospect, the Philippi Mansion, which is one of the ones that are being acquired, were all connected to the Harris and the Burnham families. It's a community has to live. In living, it probably needs to be at least somewhat appreciative of the past, but it can't be totally a prisoner of the past.
Yeah, there have been some cities that have done that, and you can just tell they're on their way out. There's no way to let it go. You have to keep moving.
Well, Jim, you realize that the original downtown of Champaign had the churches. All the churches, the lodges, city government, everything was there. And, of course, as the city grew and expanded, that was a very high-intensity area where you had a lot of redevelopment. And so the Robeson House is gone. I mean, they're all gone. They're just, I guess, a time ghost.
You brought a book along with you. did you publish that? I mean... did you write it?
I'm the co-author of it.
Okay.
Kent State Press did it.
All right.
It was John Jekyll, who was former head of the geography department at the U of I, and I were interested in trying to have the Ohio River dedicated to the whole river from Pittsburgh to Cairo, a National Heritage Corridor. And we worked several years on it. I got a couple, three governors to go along with it and so forth, but it failed. But after it was over, John and I got to talking, and he collects postcards. I collect postcards. John collected a little more princely level of postcards than I did. So most of them were John's, but we decided to do a book, which is, the title of it is The Ohio... The Vintage River in Historic or in Vintage Postcard Art. So all of the pictures are, or the images, the postcards, are all between 1905 and 1960. It was a great deal of fun going up and down the river trying to sell the idea. No heavy hitters did any heavy lifting. But I did write the legislation, and it was introduced to both houses of Congress. It just... We didn't have the heavy hitters doing it. They had their own projects.
Well, it's a terrific looking book. Is that in bookstores now, or how do you get a copy of that?
You can get it through Amazon, right now it just came out. I mean, this is one.
It's hot off the press.
It is hot off the press.
Well, congratulations on that. You've had a hand in other books as well, haven't you?
A few, but I'm a prolific writer in the sense that I've written a lot. Being a very successful publisher, we're or a writer where publishing companies are standing in line to print my stuff. I'm no James Michener.
We only have about a minute and a half or so left. Dan, what's going on in Champaign now, as you, I'm sure you keep track of the council meetings and so forth, that that you would consider a problem, or if you were the mayor, that it would be number one on your priority list?
Well, obviously the social issues concern me a lot.
Shootings.
Well, that's the most visual thing. But back when I was mayor, I tried to put together Project 18, which wanted to focus on kids from birth to, or even pre-birth, all the way to the age of 18, and tried to recognize that clearly it was a disproportionate problem among the minority community, and I really felt that the community should rise to the occasion and start doing some serious prevention and avoidance. I don't think we've turned the corner.
So that would be very high on your priority list, and it's high on the the priority list of the current council, I'm sure. Well, Dan, our time is up this morning, but thank you so much. Your friendship over the years has been terrific, and maintain that as we go along. I don't think the age that a person reaches is nearly as important as their curiosity and their productivity and those kinds of things, and I'm sure I'm going to be seeing you a lot.
We're going to keep moving, Jim.
We got to.
We're not going to rust out.
Keep riding those bicycles and do all kinds of things. But very good to see you. We'll take a short break here, maybe, Jim. We'll let Michael Kaiser get ready for the 10:30 news after this break. This is Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Jim Turpin. Thanks to Dan McCullum for dropping by for a few minutes this morning. Now we have an open line up until 11 o'clock. Our phone lines are 356-9397, text line 351-5357. A couple of texts came in during the 9 o'clock hour that we didn't get to, and one says, Elizabeth also said how much she admires Jane Fonda. She should research what Hanoi Jane said and did during the Vietnam War. It was traitorous. That's from Bill. And another says, net neutrality is to the internet what the Affordable Care Act is to health care. Both are a sham. Speaking of Obamacare, millions of Americans are signing up for 2018 coverage for the Affordable Care Act, defying the Trump administration's hostility to the law and a year-long campaign by congressional Republicans to repeal it. As the final enrollment deadline approaches on Friday for consumers in 39 states, signups appear likely to fall short of the 2017 total, due in part to the truncated sign-up period this year. Enrollment will continue into January in several states, including California and New York. But the 2018 enrollment period, the first run by the Trump administration, has defied expectations and the predictions of the president, who repeatedly proclaimed the insurance marketplace is dead. The administration has done what it can to limit sign-up, said Sandy Prager, a Republican who served 12 years as Kansas Insurance Commissioner and was president of the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. But the marketplaces are still around. Well, I mentioned earlier that it's not a good idea to quibble with the boss. when the boss is Kim Jong-un. His top aide was executed by the North Korean death squad. There was allegations of bribery and a few other things, according to recent reports. A vice marshal who was held, the most senior position in North Korea's military hasn't been seen in public since October the 13th, sparking rumors of his death. Korea's spy agency reported the top aide and his deputy, Kim Wong-hong, were expelled from the military's General Politico Bureau and punished. A rare inspection on the bureau was conducted after reports of impure attitude toward the volatile regime. The spy agency said it was looking into details about their punishment. If he was indeed kicked out of the Workers' Party, it would practically mean the end of his political career and possibly his life, though it is unknown whether or not he is still alive. Kim Wong-hong was reportedly sentenced to one of North Korea's prison camps, and two officials allegedly had been receiving favors for promotions. And the Telegraph had reported that Kim ordered the two officials to be punished as a warning to others. So that's the way they do things in North Korea. The punishment being death. They even have a death squad. Here we do things in a little different way. In fact, we had a couple of court cases that were reported in the News Gazette this morning and on our air. A convicted murderer with a shooting conviction in his past will spend what amounts to the rest of his life in prison. Reading from a story by Mary Schenck. Judge Roger Weber on Thursday sentenced Robbie Patton to 69 years in prison for the shooting death of one man and the wounding of three others a year ago in Campustown. Patton will have to serve at least 67 and a half years and was given credit for about 15 months already served. Patton, who recently turned 20 years old, was convicted by a jury in late September of the first-degree murder of George Korchev of Mundelein. He was also convicted of three counts of aggravated battery with a firearm for wounding Moses Lopez, Eric Lassane, and Robert Shepard. Like Mr. Korchev, the wounded men were unintended targets who were walking along a path on the north side of a crowded parking lot in the 300 block of East Green Street in Champaign, into which Patton fired wildly. That was back on September 25th of 2016. We'll take a break here. We're coming right back. Phone lines open until 11. In the news this morning, the path to passing the once-in-a-generation tax reform legislation hit a snag yesterday, one day after the Republicans said they had reached a deal on the measure that reconciles the House and the Senate bills that were passed. When it happened Marco Rubio of Florida said he'll vote against the $1.5 trillion bill unless the tax credit to low-income Americans can claim for their children is expanded. And I just noticed this morning that they have indeed expanded that, but no word yet that I've seen from Rubico whether it would be enough to have him change his mind. Republicans can lose two votes in the Senate, and with GOP Senator Bob Corker opposed, if Rubio is a no vote, they could still get it passed. However, Republican Senator Mike Lee of Utah is also uncertain on the final bill. also wanting the tax credit for children expanded. The Associated Press reported earlier today that the complication will likely be solved, and perhaps it has been with the expansion of the bill that they were complaining about. So we'll see. And the beat goes on in the Congress. Republican Representative Blake Fahrenthold from Texas said he won't seek re-election to a fifth term next year amid complaints about the culture of his congressional office, but he denied sexual harassment allegations. Fahrenthold apologized in a short video for an office atmosphere that he said included, quote, destructive gossip, offhand comments, off-color jokes, and behavior that in general was less than professional. He denied that a former aide's accusations from 3 years ago that he subjected her to sexually suggestive comments and behavior and fired her when she complained. At the time, the Office of Congressional Ethics investigated the claim and recommended the House Ethics Committee dismiss the case. But the allegations have been revived, partly because it was revealed that Fahrenthold paid a $84,000 settlement using money from a taxpayer-funded account. Fahrenthold is the fourth lawmaker in 2 weeks to announce that they were either resigning or not seeking re-election over misconduct allegations. Following Democratic Representative John Conyers, Democratic Senator Al Franken, and Republican Representative Trent Franks. The beat goes on and on and on and on. Who's going to be next? Amazing. Tell you what's also amazing is Gallo Miller Paint and Collision Repair. This is a full-service collision repair facility. They know that having a car accident is a very, very serious matter, and choosing the best collision repair specialist is also very serious. These are two guys that are very passionate about their business. They truly care about getting your car fixed just right. This marks the 18th year in business, the two of them together, and in that time they've repaired 23,000 vehicles. They're hands-on kind of guys. You go out to see them, and they say, oh, no, they're not in an office sitting there with their feet up on the desk. They're back in the shop every day. And not all owners of collision repair shops are like that. Dave and Bill know the collision repair business inside and out. In fact, Dave spent a number of years as an insurance adjuster before returning to his first love, which is fixing cars. And before that, Bill successfully ran body shops at other notable businesses in the area. They know that it's a hassle having your car repaired, and a collision repair shop is the last place you want to be. But they're there to help you through the process, making it as painless in your daily life as it possibly can be. Free estimates always offered. They are located in a very convenient and centrally located spot. Look for their attractive building. It's on the south side of I-74 between the Neal Street and Prospect exits. For more information, visit their website at www.gallomiller.com. It is 10:54. We'll take our final break right here. Have time for another call or two if you had something that you've been wanting to get on the air and just now have thought about it. Well, now is the time. All right. Not exactly this very minute, but as soon as this break is over. And a couple of text messages. Yesterday, Stan called and whined about Mrs. Clinton beating Trump by 3 million votes in the general election. We use the Electoral College to elect presidents. Stan must have missed school the day that was taught. And Greg Grady in Monticello says, as for the sexual harassment that was started by the Democrats to destroy Trump, but it backfired on them. The Russians would never have been mentioned if Mrs. Clinton would have won. Well, we have a couple of callers waiting, and unfortunately we are out of time this morning. We'll be back Monday morning at 9 with Lauren Tate. on our Monday morning quarterback session here on DWS in Champaign-Urbana.